Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, June 21st, 2016. I currently have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Geddes, and then our pledge is going to be led by a troop, but specifically by Tyler Jackham. So, Mr. Geddes.
Our Father in Heaven, we are indeed grateful this evening to gather together here as a city and participants in the City Council meeting. We are grateful for the laws of the land and for the government that we participate in. We ask thee that thou will help us this evening as we participate in this process, that we will do so with respect and courtesy to all that are here and for the rules of our city. We're grateful for those that have come to participate, and we welcome their input and welcome thy guidance through the rest of this meeting. And these things we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Tyler, come forward and lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Tyler. I always love it when we have a scout that will come in and lead us in the meeting. It's terrific. We've got a couple of scout troops that are with us tonight, so. Boys, welcome. Leaders, welcome as well. Glad that you're here. Next item is the approval of the meeting's agenda. So if someone would like to make a motion on the agenda, I'll take that.
I move that you accept the agenda as is.
Okay, I have a motion to accept it as is. Is there a second? Mr. Bailey seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next is public comments. This is where we set aside some time for each meeting, where residents can come and talk about whatever is on their mind. I have one person that signed up tonight, Mr. Cantrell, Tom Cantrell. So if you'd like to come forward, Mr. Cantrell, if you can give us your name, your address, and your comments.
My name is Tom Cantrell. I live at 4555 Landmark Circle in Cedar Hills. And my comment is tonight, I just wanted to say thank you and for allowing our troop to come tonight and be part of this meeting. And I have a card of thanks that we want to give to you for your service to our community and all that you guys are doing to preserve Cedar Hills and to make it a good community. Also, I'm grateful that you come tonight so that these boys can learn part of the process of what it is like to run the city and to, as they're earning the badges for building a better world. So thank you very much for doing that. I appreciate you guys for all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for serving as their leaders as well. These guys, these scouts, are led by good leaders up everywhere, is what I've always found. So thank you for what you guys do as well. Next item, that's the only public comment I have, but the next item is 3 public hearings. And so I will start with the first public hearing, which is water and sewer enterprise fund transfers out to the governmental funds to cover related water and sewer charges for fiscal year 2017. Does anyone come to speak on that public hearing? Okay. If there's no one to speak on that public hearing, then I will move on to the next one. This public hearing is on amendments to fiscal year 2016 budget, which is July 2015 through June 30th, 2016. Is anyone in the audience here to speak on that public hearing? No? Okay. We'll move on to our third and final public hearing, which is fiscal year 2017 budget, which starts July 1st, 2016, and ends June 30th, of 2017. So does anyone in the audience come to speak on that public hearing? No? We'll close the public hearing section of our meeting, move on to our consent agenda. There's two meetings that we need to approve minutes for. That's the May 3rd, 2016, and the May 17th, 2016 City Council meetings. So if someone would like to make a, but there's also an appointment of James Dalrymple to the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee. So yeah, if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion to accept the consent agenda as is. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Geddes. All those in favor? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city reports of business. Mr. Bunk, I'll start with you and then move to the right.
Mayor and Council, we did not have a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting this month. It was canceled, and so we will be meeting next month. We did have golf clinics that started today. And they're excited. All of our junior golfers are excited to try their hand at golf. We have had already 10 tournaments this month, which is a great amount of tournaments for the golf course. So golf is staying very busy. The event staff is very busy as well. They're having 4 to 5 events every week, and so that's also a positive. Summer lacrosse games started Saturday, and they're off to a great start. For those of you who are interested in recreation programs, they are available on the website. We do advertise that they are available, so look forward to the upcoming recreation programs. I've actually been working with the Lone Peak Public Safety District quite a bit lately, working on their policy and procedures update, and so I think that will be heading toward the Lone Peak Public Safety District Board for approval soon. And that is all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Mrs.
Grace,
you're up next.
The only thing I have is that Family Festival was once again a huge success, and the Farmville Company has already committed for it.
Thank you. There's not been a finance committee meeting since I think I reported last, and there's not been a public safety meeting either. So at our last Mountain Land Association of Governments Regional Transportation Committee meeting, then the group has been asked to take a look at transportation funding and how we go about doing that. So four options that they came up were to do nothing. That seemed problematic with a lot of cities whose roads are deteriorating. Second option would be to take another run at Prop 1. Third option would be to create our own legislation legislation that could be brought before the session that would be more specific to Utah County's needs. And then the fourth was road utility fees like PROGO. So, not familiar with what PROGO has done. They had a very unique situation where about 50% of their property was owned by tax-exempt organizations. BYU, Intermountain Healthcare, lots of land, but literally 50% of Provo was owned by tax-exempt organizations that did not pay property taxes. So they created a road utility fee in order to better maintain their roads. Now, other cities are looking at this. There is a fear that it would be challenged in court, but that's something that cities can look at as a method of maintaining the roads. So those were the four ways that we talked about this. So I was asked to create a subcommittee within our group to look at creating legislation, potential legislation that could be brought in the next legislative session that would be language, that would be more specifically for Utah County, and so that's what we're doing. So I'm engaged in a group that's trying to figure out some language that hopefully we'll all agree on. Sullivan County, I think, is probably going to join the discussions, and we'll see where it goes. So that's it. Ed? Just guess.
Okay, so I attended the probably dispatch meeting this month, last week, and really, the most report is that the building is really long. It's got all the.
Charlie?
North Fork Point Solid Waste Special Services District did not use the hydrant. But I think it's important to note that we're heading into the busy season as far as water usage goes, and so it's important to remind everyone to use as little as possible and encourage your neighbors and, you know, Facebook, friends, whatever you communicate as a city administrator leader to remind everyone to keep the rules that we set and encourage everyone to use as little water as possible to be there on screen.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Shaw, you have anything? Very much. Move on to our scheduled items. And so first is an action item on conditional use permit for Walmart outdoor storage and sales. Mr. Goodman, your turn.
Mayor, sorry, real quick. I was meeting the scouts, but I did have somebody ask me to put their name on the public comment, and I didn't get a chance to do it because I was meeting the scouts.
What's that?
Mr.
Hayden. I think he signed up in the back.
Oh. Do you all right?
Yes.
Do you want to come up and take 3 minutes?
Sure.
Devo, if you want to state your name and your address, then you'll have 3 minutes.
My name is Devo Hagan. I'm 10375 North Bristol Conway. I'm actually here speaking on behalf of my wife, who is unable to attend this meeting. And so she has sent me her words, and I'll quote them verbatim so that it comes from her voice, not mine. I apologize, I'm not going to be able to make it to the city council meeting tonight. I voice my concerns to all of you, as well as staff, about what Walmart has done as far as sales around the outside of the building. I like Walmart, I approve Walmart, but they need to follow the guidelines that we set up, as well as be restricted. As many as you recall, we were living in Cedar Hills at the time we approved the Walmart. It was a very heated issue. The square footage was already increased to them beyond our original guidelines. They have now pushed outside of that allowance. They're selling even more stuff in areas that were never designated to be allowed for sales. Not only is it aesthetically not pleasing, it has made the outside of that Walmart that we worked so hard to come into such high standards to look like every other Walmart in the state, a dump area for seasonal items. That was never the intention of the council when we approved it. We have them build a beautiful store in our city to our standards. There's no reason for us to allow them to do what they have been doing, especially during the 5 month period, half of the year basically, wanting to increase the square footage of the store by exploiting into areas that were never designated for sales. What you guys allowed to happen with Walmart will set precedent in our city, and many other businesses that come in is going to have the same expectation. Please do not allow that to happen to our country.
All right. Let's move back to our scheduled item. Mr. Goodwin, why don't you go ahead and the presentation?
Just start from the beginning here. In 2007, I believe it was, Walmart entered into the development agreement that prohibited the outdoor staging and sale of goods. We didn't have a development agreement, but council packet because it's a bit too large to overview. But the portion of the stuff talks about outdoor storage is a 9.4, so whether that got sent out in email to the council, but in 9.4 discusses outdoor storage. And it says that the developer agrees that except for the areas designated in the approval documents or in subsequent and separate outdoor sales area conditional use permits, there will be no storage allowed to occur. They were permanently outside of the Walmart facility. Now, what Walmart is here tonight to do is to obtain one of those conditional use permits. So that they can temporarily store outside goods. So on the diagram provided, I've met with Walmart, maybe I've gone down to Walmart, been down there on a couple of occasions, to talk about how they stage their goods on the outside. And they've been gracious enough to help us work with them to put together this diagram that's in your packet. Going around the building, items 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all permanent structures. They are
HVAC units, organic bins, they're permanent, these are locked up, always locked with key. There's recycling bales and pallets and a trash compactor, so it's, that's their, part of their infrastructure, their store, as you look around the area there. Items 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are all areas that Walmart would like to continue to store goods and outside. You see items such as mold soil, mold garden products, propane. I didn't see any grills or smokers out there today when I drove by. Was there any smokers out there? But mostly it deals with seasonal items such as flowers, mulch, soils, papers, things of that nature. So with that being said, like I mentioned, I went down and drove around the Walmart today just to kind of get a sense of how it looked, get a sense of the appearance of it maintained, and also as far as safety is concerned, because that lane there that main lane between items or areas looks like 9 and 7. Those look like those boxes are really close together in your diagram. However, there's probably about a good 25 to 30 room for a fire truck to come through. There's enough two-way traffic to be unobstructed. And then in lane or area 7, I counted about 18 parking stalls being used to stage goods. This is the area that had papers, bricks, and some flowers. So I didn't have any concerns about any public safety concerns. Councilmember Bailey, when you've been down there, just a fire truck, I was wondering if anything I didn't say anything that was concerned. So as far as safety is concerned, I didn't see anything there. Aesthetically, it looked like it was pretty well maintained. I didn't see any bags of bolts that spilled out into the roadway. I didn't see any papers that was screwed off. It looked like it was fairly well maintained. So with that being said, I will entertain any questions that the council may have. Keep in mind that this is a conditioning permit, so any conditions would need to be tied to a standard that the city has.
No concern about that.
Okay. Sure.
So, I think one of the most important things for me, I know as a council member, all of us, when we are approving projects, we spend a considerable amount of time doing research, discussing options with residents, making sure that whatever we're approving, what conditions we're placing, what development agreements we enter into, are meeting the purposes of that area and meeting the concerns or addressing the concerns that residents have raised. And I believe that the council who approved the original concept for Walmart and the development agreement did exactly that as well. I read through the minutes from back then in 2007 when these things were discussed, and the council at that time was quite clear that what they wanted to avoid was having items out in the front to keep it from looking like Walmarts in other areas. So my preference would be that we allow for floral flowers specifically to be in the front of the store, but any other outdoor thing should be contained to the garden center in the south side. I think as Mrs. Hagan has stated in her comments or in emails that she sent to council and staff, that officials in the city and Walmart were very clear when Walmart was approved that this was going to be a smaller Walmart than American Ford or some of the other ones. That was always the intent. The original Walmart wasn't approved due to the size. So they wanted it to be more of a smaller looking feel and to meet certain standards to make it look nice for the community. And I agree, we've been strict with parks. We have been allowed to do certain things outside. We've had that development agreement in there for a reason, and that's to keep that area looking nice. And so my preference would be that we uphold that original development agreement and hold Walmart to that in order to maintain that look and feel of our commercial area.
So let me ask you a question. Flowers up front, are you talking about zone 11 or 10 or both?
Let me pull that up again. I am talking about Yeah, 10 and 11.
Okay.
With everything else being on the south side in the Garland Center.
Okay. Is there a question on my report?
Yeah, it's in home too. We really appreciate Walmart. I really appreciate Walmart. I think it's great that they're here. It's very good to enjoy that mission. It's really good relationship. And so, you know, as they want to go a little bit outside, I think we should be somewhat flexible with them. However, they can go too far. Walmart this year has done more than us in the past year. It's just a really good partnership. I haven't had complaints or seen complaints in the past year, but this year I definitely have. So I think that they were still coming a little bit. You know, they can originally bring a little bit, but also be a little flexible in some places. In particular, I thought the floral in front was nice, actually. And that's good. And this is recently also. The thing that in the front that kind of got everyone's attention, I think, was a big blue pool. That was not good. That seemed like it was what people wanted to be. So I think that if Walmart is careful enough to make any eyesores, then I think that they can expand a little bit outside. One area that I would disagree with expanding into would be the parking area. I think once they got out there, it did seem like it was encroaching a little too far, in my opinion. So I do think the outdoor venues on the south side, because that's where the outdoor area is, I thought that wasn't too bad. And I thought that was okay. But going into the parking area, I thought it was encroaching a little too far. And making the front look nice is really cool. I see the flowers detracting and making it look nice. They look really nice in the front. But other items like swimming pools and such, don't keep the aesthetic duty that you want in the
any other kind of questions?
I've got a couple.
Go ahead.
So I've got a little bit of experience with Walmart, and I know that when they first opened up here, they didn't have anything in their aisles. It was just the way that they marketed it. The thing with Walmart is they are the largest retailer in the world. And they're very good at what they do. And they have a concept called Store the Community. And what they do is they take feedback from the residents and the shoppers and whoever participates with Walmart, and they try to accommodate the people. They're not going to want to bring in papers if nobody's going to purchase papers. They're in the business to make a profit. They're not bringing in stuff that people don't want. And the feedback I'm hearing from the citizens is they like the idea that they're bringing in more and more and more. So now that instead of having to go down to American Fork and go to like a Home Depot, that they can go to our local Walmart and buy papers or buy a piece of sod in order to fix their grass. They like walking into the store and not having to realize something's not there. I think as customers, we've all participated in Walmart and shopping there. And one of the aggravating things is, hey, I need a hammer or I need a this, whatever. And then going down to any store and realizing they don't carry it. And I believe that this Walmart in our community is taking the feedback, the marketing teams that they use, and that they're listening to the residents and saying, this is what we want. They're not going to arbitrarily just bring stuff in just to bring stuff in. It doesn't work that way in business. They're bringing stuff in that people are buying. Each and every day you drive by there, the pallets out in the south side and whatnot, the pavers, those pallets are shrinking. And the reason they're shrinking is because people are actually going to the store. And I don't think that if you start limiting them on I think if we start limiting them on where they can sort some of this stuff, then our citizens and citizens that come into this Walmart are going to say, yeah, you know, I can't get it at Cedar Hills Walmart. I'm going to go down to the American Fork Walmart or Costco or somewhere else. And that's just taking revenue out of the city and getting revenue out of the store. I personally, I like the way that it's set up, and I like the proposal that's been given.
Yes, I
made some comment in work session, and I just want to echo those. But, you know, I think Walmart is a terrific neighbor. I think they've done a great job.
like to just say, if I didn't have the message Jenny and Rob, just because something was approved in 2007 doesn't mean it has to stay that way. And, you know, I think conditional uses evolve. And does Walmart get better and tries to do what the citizens want and approve it? Give product to the citizens here. I think we need to do all that. Last thing I want to see is just to do things that make us, give us a reputation of being not business friendly. And I think we need to make sure that we are business friendly in a very good, conscientious way. I think Walmart is conscientious. I like to make sure as long as it's safe. And, you know, it's done in a tasteful way. It's cleaned up. The bags break. Then I think they do a good job of that. Personally, I haven't heard any complaints, so you know I understand that there have been a few complaints. You know, I'm always leery of reacting, calling fire when you know one or two citizens in the entire city come to us with people complaining. I haven't heard any negative complaints. So anyway, concepts evolve. In our original conditional, or the conditions that were approved by Walmart, they had the ability to come to the city and receive a conditional use permit. And so, you know, I support that they can, as long as they're safe and clean and neat, I have no problem.
Thank you. So, I'm going to invite our friends from Walmart up in just a minute in case they want to say anything. You're welcome to ask questions.
Did Councilmember Zavala have anything to add?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Fantastic. So I just wanted to point out in the development agreement, this is section 9.2.2, that Walmart and the city, we underwent negotiations for quite some time, actually for some paper. I remember being there for these negotiations. Walmart and the city council at the time agreed the language is in section 9.2.2, which says the city council should be able to set parameters limiting size, location, duration, and appearance of the outdoor sales area. And it even says that the city council may deny the request if the proposed use is not found to be consistent with the overall development. So I think we have broad latitude here to do what we can best for our community as well as what is best for Walmart. I agree with Jenny Rob that I'd like to eliminate the section. Which is in the south parking lot, in section 7, which is in the south parking lot. I'm really worried about mingling the operations of the store with customers as they try to drive in and out of that area. I don't think that's very safe. It's also unsightly as people drive by the store. And I agree that we ought to be seeing stuff in the store to just be plant material.
Thank you, Daniel. And so, I will echo that I also thoroughly enjoy our partnership with Walmart. There are people I interact with, the manager, Mike, all the time when I'm there. And so my only comment is that in Section 7, which includes the parking lot, this year for the first time there was actually closed off to traffic, which I don't think was a good idea. And so if we can keep items out of Section 7, I am pleased with that, and items along 5, 6, 8, and 9, which is against the south side of the building, that seems to be as fine as long as it's kept clean, which I always have seen it be kept clean. So my only issue was Section 7. So, one of our friends from Walmart, if you guys want to say something, you're welcome to come up. Maybe just tell us your name, council, if you have a question for them, right?
My name is Joshua Barnes. I'm an assistant manager for Cedar Hills. We do listen to the community very well. We have a team that goes out there and listens. And we were told by the community that they wanted bricks, they wanted papers, they wanted this stuff because they didn't want to go out their own people or their parents' work because they don't have consumers in their car shops. So we brought that in and it's selling very well. Support the community because that's what Walmart's here for. Our number one practice is always to be safe and taking care of the community. Because without the community, we're too long into this. So we listen very, very, very deeply to what we want. And every single customer I have had has said they love what we've done. They love the flowers. We have better quality flowers in the Highland Nursery. They're told. They're excited about the grapes because, like I said, in one store, instead of going to the home, going to the grocery store, you know, it's nice. It's the tax revenue. It helps everybody. You know, the extra stuff that you get is extra taxes for the community. So we're really passionate about what we want to do to take care of our customers. We average between 1,200 to 1,500 people a day, plus about 8,200 to 10,000 people a week that we service in the community. We want to take care of them. We want to be the state. We want to do everything we can to be better for this community. And every single comment I get is, how pleased they are. I've never had anything a little upset. They just, everybody's happy with us. But we want to serve the community in our community. We don't want people to go out to pay out there because they don't get the customer service that they have, like we get to the community. We want to take care of the community. We care. We really care. Like I said, we listen.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I know you guys do care, and there's a reason that you carry the products that you do. We're mentioning certain zones that we're looking at. Are you familiar with the zones that we're talking about? Like when I say zone 7, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
Right. So can you accomplish what you guys want to accomplish and not put anything in zone 7?
Honestly, we cannot because it's extra space, which is the part that off which we have favors that we brought in this year because the customers wanted it. And we got a lot of shrubs and trees and bushes. So that's what we had up here this year. And we didn't, you know, one day we had a block off and we hurried things down so people could drive there. And we got nothing but compliments about what we brought in for the community. And I said, we listen, and there's no safety issue there. People could drive in and out and everything. They pick up the back doors and everything right into the vehicle. So we say, we did not have one out. It's great there.
So you're saying that you do need to put items in the zone 7?
Yes, so we can still take care of the community because, you know, the pavers and the brakes and everything. We need an area to have sell that. The bushes and the trees and everything, we need an area to sell that items. Our patio is really small and we get 2 to 3 truckloads of flowers a week. You know, and so we want to keep it fresh looking for the community and everything. So yes, we do need the extra space to serve our customers. And everything's kept clean. Now, if there's a tree that falls over and there's a little dirt, we take pride in making sure that we save something. So that's one thing that we will always have, the safety and cleanliness in our store. That's not just a thing, that's our house.
Thank you. Council, do you guys have any questions for Joshua?
You say you've got about 8,000, between 8,000 to 10,000 people a week.
Is that how many come through the cash register?
Yes.
So that's transit. So each, so if we were to say each person brought in, because it's very seldom that someone comes in by themselves. I mean, I'll come in here, I'll come here, but it's usually me and a few of my kids. So technically, you could probably times out by 3. So you're seeing maybe 30,000 people foot traffic through your store per week.
Yes, not more. We have
and when so 6 in 2007, what was that? What were those numbers?
We were down to about 6,000 a week.
So you've gone from 18,000 if I times it by 3 to 24,000.
Yeah, we're growing for the community. You know, community is you guys grow, we grow. And we just want to serve the community.
Absolutely.
Any other questions?
No, I'm just going to add my comment. I agree with what everyone has said as far as our partnership with Walmart. I do definitely appreciate it. And one of the things I think we hear often is that people compliment our Walmart, that it's so much nicer than other Walmarts. And they some people will come to our Walmart, even if they're closer to American Fork, because lines aren't as long, it's cleaner, that kind of a thing. And so we've set this expectation that our Walmart is nicer than a lot of other Walmarts. And that's, I think, what we're just trying to maintain with that development agreement and the conditional uses that we apply. And as I said, we've been strict with the other businesses in our area. With our new zoning guidelines that we just put together. We were very specific there about outdoor storage and sales, and so I'm just hoping that the council will continue to adhere to that. And so with your sales, you're saying there's no way that you can contain everything to 5, 6, 8, and 9?
No.
No, I'm sorry, everything outside of flowers. So having flowers in 10 and 11, but everything else in 5, 6, 8, and 9?
6 is actually a propane storage unit.
Mm-hmm.
By law, we cannot put that outside. We have to keep that outside. So that means it's the outside.
But that's fine. Well, I guess what I'm saying, my suggestion is in zones 10 and 11, we allow for outdoor flower sales there in storage. But as far as everything else, your grills, chairs, propane, things like that, those are maintained in the garden center and areas 5, 6, 8, and 9.
Inside the garden center is all our furniture that we set up there for customers to try out. So we keep that inside. So honestly, I don't have a lot of room, say like AF or anything. So we put barbecues out there, we keep them nice and clean, we wipe them down daily. We really make sure everything's safe and clean in there, because the customers want this product. We need to show the customer where it's at and let them buy it.
So, but you've got flowers right now in zone 9 and in zone 9.
I have flowers in zone 9. In 10 right now, I have flowers. My plants really killed, because we're coming to the end of the season, I've been able to kill 15 snap pieces over there of flowers just today, because I'm having stuff sold inside. So I need the flowers.
Right. So with the flowers, can't you move them to 10 and 11 and put the items that have been in 11 over in
I can't put it in 11 because, A, there's not water over there to water the flowers.
But you could put them in 10.
10, if they are in 10 right now. I can water in 10. The reason I can't do it in 11 is because it's so far good. Everything goes, honestly, if it goes that far, it's the same thing. So
but could you move all the flowers in 9 to 10?
No, we don't have enough room for that. We get seriously 2 to 3 truckloads a week of flowers, and that's 16 racks each load.
But still, item 9 from this visual looks relatively small, and it looks and conceptually looks like you could move items from 9 to 10, and then I think what Mrs. Reese is saying, and I agree, is take everything in 7 and see if you can move it over in item number 9, in zone 9. That way you're keeping zone 7 free from everything but carbs.
I have a thought to add too, and that is that in business, you know, every storage plot has its profit that you calculate and how much sales were made on each one. If we did restrict and didn't allow you to go into zone 7 at all, then certainly we'd have to decrease your products that you have. But you could limit that to the least profitable, least sales items that you have through the experience of this year, where you try selling all these items. There should be some slower moving items even among the papers. Probably some papers that sell better than others, of course there is. And you could take the lowest margin, the lowest profit, and the lowest sales items. And you know, you have a few customers that are happy to go somewhere else, but you can cover, you could satisfy the majority by keeping the most popular items and putting them in that zone 9, where you get some flowers from elsewhere, and maybe some of the sort of flowers. So, yeah, it will impact you, but I think you can minimize that impact through choosing carefully which ones you keep.
On the bridge this year, I ordered 3. We have about half truck over the head right now, and as you tell the community, they want some product. They want to buy this. And if they don't have it, again, they go to American Ford. American Ford is possibly going to need that customer, which we lose at the store.
I think we understand that you're just serving the community and trying to provide them products that they want, and they want those products. I think what some of the council is saying is that they would prefer that you're trying to keep items out of zone 7, and it was suggested that maybe you move the flowers from second zone 9 over into zone 10, where you can still water them.
grab the flowers in zone 10, let's put it all the way around here, and we can't build, it up because that can be part of the customer service. So we just do one row around here, around the flower, because the customer still has space, and it's also really safe.
Mayor, I have a question. Joshua, so looking at the map, and listening to my fellow council members here, so it's on 7, it sounds like they're concerned with this issue. What if you move zone 7 just to the west, or on the picture I'm looking at, to the left of zone 11, right in front of the school there, and put your pavers and your whatever you've got out there in zone 7, just completely move zone 7 over to the west or to the left of 11.
As possible, and
would that work?
In zone 11 is where we put our chairs, swing sets, and I know that the pools are actually an issue, so we can move the pool back inside, but we do get a lot of chairs, and
right, but right now you're not using anything to the left.
Zone 11, we
need to the left, so completely. So here's what happened here.
Yeah.
So here's zone 11 right here. So if you put it over here,
we would do a little bit over there.
If you took 7, forward it to where?
4 over there. So that would become
the fire doors.
Yeah,
yeah, you would have to leave the fire door entrance. You'd have to leave an 8-foot path, 4-foot path for fire doors. But you still have, I don't know the square foot here, but I put it in front of you, but.
If we can't have zone 7, we're here to help you guys, just like you're here to help us. So if you don't want us to have zone 7, we'll juggle other things around. We just, like I said, we want to serve the community. And if zone 7 you guys do not want us to do, we're fine with that. So we will redesign what we have to do every year to serve the customers.
Okay, question for you. Do you have any issue if we did that, taking zone 7 and asking them to put it to the left or to the west of zone 11?
To me, it still violates the development agreement that we entered into with Walmart and the city when Walmart was approved. And again, it also violates what we just approved for that entire zone, which didn't allow for any outdoor storage for any of our businesses without, coming back to the council. And so if we open that up, we have to realize that every business then will have set a precedent that they get to use the front of their store for any storage and sales in our entire commercial zone. And the intent of that original development agreement was to try to keep that from happening, to try to get a certain look and feel for our commercial area that meant more of a small community feel, different from other large big box stores.
And I completely understand that. Already allow 11 and 10, that's in front of the store.
Well, my recommendation was only allowing flowers in 10 and 11.
But that's still, get rid of it.
And put everything else in 5, 6, 8, and 9.
Oh, so get rid of 11 and 10?
No, I mean, you can keep it, just only put flowers up there, because that maintains that still, that nice look. I mean, we require a lot of landscaping anyway in those areas.
Yeah. Do you understand his concern on 11, though? Is it? So just to
he can't put flowers there, there's no water.
Yeah, they could drag a hose there, but that would be a trip hazard.
I understand that.
Future pawn shops or future clothing stores just having a whole outside building.
Right.
And to look junk, I like the idea of limiting into live progress, also live plants, because that really looks nice out there. It doesn't look junky at all. And so I'm in favor of that.
It adheres to landscaping requirements that we have for that zone.
Yeah, and I understand that, but what they've told us is they've grown from foot traffic of 8,000, 6,000 to now 10,000. They've almost not quite doubled, but and to restrict, I mean, we want to be business friendly, and I'm not saying we're going to want to pay anything, but if they're selling it hot, the last thing I want to do is drop it back down to 6,000 or 7,000 and lose that. Because I know I would be that way. I went in the other day, I was looking for one of those spray cans, the Toro and the spray water. They didn't have it. So what did I do? I went down to the one in American Fort
and I bought a few extra things while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
They had it at our Walmart. We could have kept that money to the local businesses. The tax revenue would have come back to the city. And also this Walmart, I don't know how many of our citizens went there, but it also provides jobs for our community.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm worried about, is I don't want, I know come January, they start cutting back after the Christmas and this and that. You know, it just doesn't affect the aesthetics of the everything, but, you know, people's livelihoods that rely on working there, you know, and getting benefits and whatnot. That's another thing that I worry about.
Yeah, and we bought this line all the time with our commercial zone, right? I mean, when Hearts came in, we required them to install a lot of expensive brick, which they've never done for any of their other gas stations. They all had these several buildings. And one of the things that they said was, you know, we require it to look nicer at the cost of them than their other locations. But in the end, they appreciated that and said, if you're going to make us do it, make everybody else in that zone do it too. Don't be really strict about a couple of us and then lose your staff.
I agree with that.
And we restricted certain types of business in that area, even though they could be quite lucrative. I mean, we're not going to allow a car dealership to come in a commercial zone. We've already said that's not going to be allowed, even though that could bring in a lot of revenue for the city, because we were trying to maintain a certain look and feel as a small commercial zone in a small neighborhood city. And so that's what I was saying is, if we're going to change standards, we have to recognize that that's going to impact that entire zone. And the reason why the council at the time put this development agreement into place that Walmart agreed to is to try to keep that look and feel. And so if money is what's important, then, you know, there are some sort of things that we should have restricted in our commercial zone. But the intent is always to make it that neighborhood look and feel for that area.
So let me ask you a question. I understand what you're saying, Mrs. Reese, is that you're fine allowing things in the front in zone 10, but you're not fine with them in 11, is that correct?
I'm saying limit it to floral items in 10 and 11, though I understand why they can't do it in 11. So limit the front of the store to your flowers, which matches the landscaping requirements we already have for all of the businesses in our area, and put your other seasonal goods on 5, 6, 8, and 9.
So you will allow...
Which, by the way, is already getting a concession from the original development agreement, which can allow any outside sales in the stores.
So you're allowing 5, 6, 8, and 9, but you want fresh flowers all in zone 10 and nothing in 11.
If they can't do flowers, that would be fine.
I would suspect if 11, if all they could put in 11 was flowers, they turn on lines and flowers, they could come through and put their bigger. And I don't think they would utilize that very much. I don't know for sure.
Honestly, because if we pull a hose over there, that's our only entrance, so we would be really worried about safety, so we would have to get to another safety more concerned.
Okay, so I think, does anyone else have any questions for Joshua?
One other comment from here.
Go ahead.
I just want to point out, and Ben was talking about sales tax, and I just wanted to point out that most of the sales tax doesn't actually stay in our local community the way that they allocate.
While that may be true, there's still around 25% that is point of sale, so we don't want to diminish that. And so, just to be clear, I think in terms of what I'm hearing is that I think most of the council members would prefer that nothing be in 7. And Mrs. Reese is saying fresh flowers in zone 10, and 11, nothing, but allowing 5, 8, 9. And so, but if you're allowing in zone 10, which is in the front, could they not do something in zone 11, which is also the front?
I have no problem with them putting it in anything 11 with seasonal nature.
I'm not sure that defeats, you know, what we're trying to accomplish in terms of, you know, clean, orderly.
They're a retailer. I mean, they have to get goods on display.
I mean, right.
Since when did we become retailers? I don't know, as a council. You know, let's let the experts do it, and let's just make sure that it's clean, neat, and safe. You know, we're not retailers. You are. And so let's get out of their way.
My only issue was earlier in the year going in zone 7, where traffic was completely blocked out, and I think that was a bad idea.
Yes, and we fixed that.
And so, so keeping zone 7, I think. You even said that you could not do that.
Yeah, if I have to go into 11,
where we are. Walmart's saying that they can accommodate until 7, but you can't do fresh flowers at 11, keep it until 10. is something that they can do. So, all right.
So I'm going to make a motion.
What's that?
I move that we approve a conditional use permit for Walmart to use designated areas as separate outdoor sales areas subject to the following conditions. Those conditions being that zones 10 and 11 are restricted to flowers specifically, and all other outdoor uses are restricted to areas 5, 6, 8, 9, and the garden center, and that those outdoor uses only include the items that Walmart has submitted to the council in their proposal.
So I have a motion. Is there a second?
Can we discuss?
Who's second?
Can I discuss before we
discuss? No.
So,
I'll second it, but I have some discussion.
Okay, so you do second it. Now, what is your discussion?
I would suggest that rather than eliminating the flowers in the front, we limit the living items so that we have trees out there, also not just eliminating the flowers.
I will accept that motion. So I meant to say any living plants.
Okay. So you wanted to talk about, you said fresh flowers in zone 11, but Joshua just talked about how that's problematic. There's no bush of water over there. And there's some concern that streaming a hose over there, people could trip on that. So,
I don't wish to amend just because if they decide at some point they can figure it out, I want it to be open for them to do so.
I agree too. I can picture them moving some trees over there for the day. You don't have to water trees as often, especially if they're in a good pile. So, if they can figure out a way to put some living things over there, then leave that open.
Okay. All right, I have a motion that has been seconded. Any further
discussion? We have got discussion, right? So, they talked about taking a 7. The pavers and all that, move them over to 11. But in Mrs. Reese's motion, those pavers got left out. Where do we let those guys put those?
In my motion, I said that would be restricted to 5, 6, 8, 9 and Darwin Center.
So against the wall.
And can you guys make that work?
Yeah.
So you can make it work without 7.
Except 6 is propane, so
yes, but it's propane.
Yeah. So it's 5, 8, 9.
Okay. And it's 2 okay, sorry.
What's that?
Is 2 okay? We put down that's our organic cans. We recycle them.
Yeah, those are there now, right?
Yes.
I think that's part of the development agreement, isn't it? Yeah, that's okay. What we're
agreeing. Okay.
All right. Amendment.
I have a motion that has been seconded. So
I'd like to propose an amendment, Jenny.
Okay.
It's very simple. I just would like to add that the stipulated theory is that we include all
nine. Oh, yes, I have an amendment.
Okay. That motion has been accepted by Mrs. Reese, so I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? If not, let's have a vote. We'll start with Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
All accepted. Aye.
Aye. Okay. Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much. Joshua, thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Next item is item number 12, H. Gordon. We're going to be talking about the driving range specs.
Yeah. Yes, Mayor and Council, thank you very much. This has been discussed in the past, and there was
instruction
that the council has.
Can we zoom in right along? That only took an hour.
Back to our vendors.
Last time I said that they would be good at this, they want to be business friendly. We used to tell Walmart where they can stop breaks.
All existing poles that are 30 feet out of ground. So I put behind you, obviously, the first 5 or 50 feet above ground now. Everything else would be replaced in its original hole where it currently sits. It would be matching up to 50 foot. And all all the netting will be installed as well in that section.
All the way to the end?
All the way to the end. The difference is only $1,800 is the difference from the last proposal you had. Okay. So,
$2,800.
Well, see, did you see how that
$2,800
instead of $2,800. Okay. But how it works out, you see that how it's broken down there for the poles at $16,525, and that is to get rid of the old poles and replace all the poles 50 feet out of ground, and then the netted hardware is from $1,300. Of that $15,000 is the trade off that's due over 2 years for their work will pass. I will point out that in addition to their 2 years, they also will return them here every year in addition, which brings in more cash for a full term. It's always a full $100,000. So it brings in great revenue for us. So that is the updated timeline. We are tentative on the schedule right now with them because of their schedules for the end of September, and that would be to do the whole scope of the work to finish the rest of it. So our plans would be at that point, shut the driving engine on that maybe while they do their work.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Gordon?
I don't, but I do have one for Mr. Harden.
Go ahead.
Are you good with this, Mr. Harden? Have you read this proposal and all that?
Briefly, yes.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
but, you know, of course you'd like it sooner. I mean, we all have it done tomorrow. But,
I mean, again, I'm doing this for the community, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, something needs to be done, and this is great for me. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
I just want to add thank you to Reagan Goldstock for reading still. This was much better than I think we even could have anticipated. So thank you very much.
I give all the credit to Mr. Doyle, who was able to work with the two vendors.
Thank you, Wade.
Absolutely. We're kind of for it ourselves, so it's a huge win all the way around. Downfall is the timing. They're busy. They're having to do. Obviously, Neil's funeral could probably do it a little quicker, but it's the dead company because it's the son of us. So, but it is a huge one.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Gordon? I'll take one.
I'd like to express my appreciation for Greg and staff.
Thank you.
Wonderful job.
Thank you. Okay. Motion.
Okay. I would make a motion to approve the expenditure of funds for approximately $37,825 for the installation of new poles and any slash hardware, which will raise the driving range hence to 50 feet.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Charlie seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crawford.
Aye.
Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Congratulations. Next item, which is item number 13, golf carts.
Yes, I guess I'm here to ask questions or information about how
to do it. Would you give the council some background on the issues with the batteries, kind of where we're at with those and why we're in this situation?
I'm just going to give you a hard time in telling you that. We were told you were going to have a PowerPoint presentation and...
We updated the Windows 10, I lost everything.
Well, that's not far from the truth.
So what happened with our golf carts, I'm not a mechanic, but we have to do discharges on our batteries. Periodically check the stats of the batteries, the aquatic battery.
Okay. Mayor, we're good.
But we should probably start this item over.
I believe we are recording. So we are on item number 13 still, which is the golf cart, please.
And start from the
beginning. And Doyle made a presentation about how this happened.
I'm going to start over back.
Yeah.
How it initially happened was, is EZGo has golf carts, and they have preset computer systems throughout the golf cart for the terrain. Our golf course obviously has the beginning terrain, and that ultimately is the downfall we're at today. We didn't catch that due to that discharge unit malfunctioning, where they came out to help us and assist us to test our fleet, to get their numbers against ours, and ask them to realize our discharge units. Discharge unit is, we asked for a new discharge unit. We do have a new one right now. And the old discharge unit wasn't looking at it, it fixed that.
So how do we... What is a discharge unit?
Okay, so what a discharge unit does to test discharge real quick, you fully charge your battery, we attach that to the individual battery, each car has four. The minutes it takes to discharge the battery will tell you how good that battery is. So it will discharge minutes, so 50 minutes or higher, test that battery is good. The charge was testing that when we had it. When we did test that against RMTs, which was a correct working model, they were all testing from 14-minute discharges to about a 37-minute discharge, which means they were battery at max was only 50% of its initial life.
So the pallets, so where are we now? Because there are a couple of pallets and batteries delivered. Is that enough for our whole fleet?
Yes, so we spent 4 days with the 640 85-pound batteries to change all those.
So
every car has four brand new batteries.
Are there only four?
They didn't have to be.
Well, are there only four batteries in each car?
Yeah. So years ago, runs four 12-volt batteries, but other different company models run 8 6-volt batteries.
So, I understand you have a new discharge unit, but how do we make sure something like this doesn't happen again?
Well, first things, we implemented a new plan. I mean, I went downstairs, I got involved with our course mechanic and our cart specialist that we have over here, and we implemented a plan to have, instead of testing things monthly, we're testing things, you know, daily, so that we can catch these things. And we don't have to look for this point. This is like kind of all of us, so we didn't even know how to happen. And easy goes never had to happen. Our teams never had to happen like this. So it's something, it's a work experience for all of us.
So the only observation I have, because I believe accidents happen, and so I'm glad we're addressing that, is that whenever there's a problem, I think the council would appreciate if we're brought up to speed before it becomes critical mass. So just let us know sooner than later.
I agree with you. Normally we would have done that, but the time we found out that was the problem until we had, you know, we had two dual player terms to it. Unfortunately, not right behind it. We never would have made it, and that was why we went through changing that to where I could go to find out what the best model was. But I agree with you on that.
Great. I think it's always easy to let us know technically. So thank you.
What's that? I have a couple of quick questions, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
I just don't make the math on this. It says the cost to extend the golf cart lease would be $6,200 per cart. We're talking how many carts?
I didn't figure that math. We have 80 carts.
80 carts. So we're extending all the carts, right?
Right.
So 80 times 6,200 is what? That's $496,000.
Now,
I agree with you. And this is the cost would remain at $78,000. So I'm just not seeing how that sense.
$6,200 is what we pay per month.
So it's not
for all the cards.
So that it's supposed to say per month instead of per card.
Right.
Okay. I was scared too.
I wasn't quite getting this. $500,000. So I.
Just tell us if I had a $74,400.
Okay.
74.4, and then we pay property tax.
Okay, Rob, another question. Okay, any other questions for Wade?
So, I just want to make sure you understand, because originally we thought that getting this new lease was going to cover everything for the entire 4 years. So, what happened when the batteries weren't covered as part of that?
In that lease, it says bumper to bumper, and any working component is not covered under a bumper to bumper program. So, they would get headlights, spark plugs, batteries, those things only got covered on a bumper to bumper warranty. The warranty on the batteries that is listed in there, that's not a dead thing. You know, we're still working on that piece.
Because RMT thinks it should be covered, right?
RMT also believes that it should be covered. Easy Go they are the manufacturer, they're the ones that, like any warranty, they're going to fight us on it, and I'm not done fighting either. It's just, I'm a bulldog when I have to be, just waiting for the right guy. Adam Thomas, how much we've talked about the same for this.
So the cost of the batteries, I think I read somewhere that looking to replace them all is about $80,000. So they're covering that in exchange our lease for another year is $78,000. So basically, we're either way, whether we replace them or we get a new lease, is $78,000 or about $80,000.
Yeah, and in addition to that, it's the $4,000.
Okay, so Mr. Shaw, yes, are you up to speed on this issue? And I think the council was under the impression that this would cover it probably should have covered. Our leasing agent, RMT, thinks it should have been covered. Manufacturer, EasyGo, does not. How far do you press this?
Well, I'd like to see the language of the warranty, because that's going to be the key on this. I'd like to see that language. I'll give it to them in a couple of weeks and see if there's anything that's given that for EasyGo. If there is, then we're going to press so hard. If there's not, then we'll press anywhere. Looking at the government of the warranty in the context of auto vehicles, typically you have to include things like this in the warranty affirmatively instead of just relying on oil things. So, I don't know that's easier to get
others. Okay. Council, you want to table this, bring it back in a couple of weeks after we've had a more thorough legal review? Or you can make a motion?
If we talk about it, are
you over? They're already here and
okay.
Installed.
Okay. So we really don't want it. I mean, at this point.
Well, you need the batteries no matter what.
Right.
It's just a function of whether EasyGo accepts responsibility for that or not.
Yeah, it's pushing through the base.
Yeah.
RMT has said that one has to pay, in theory, pay for the batteries to help us out.
If we extend the lease, does that change anything as far as fighting the warranty? If you feel like we are entitled to fight that?
By the way, Windows just wanted to know if I wanted to make an upgrade now or later.
By not extending the lease right now?
Right. By not extending it, we can get out
of here. I chose some random day at 11 p.m.
Is there any reason why we would just table it and then get a little more information on back? Is there anything pressing that we have to extend the lease right now? I mean, we got to lease it anyway. I mean, at the end of this period, we would then enter in another 4-year lease or whatever term anyway, right?
Correct.
So financially.
Financially, it's the same issue, right?
Yeah.
Charles, generally?
It may be a little different.
I was under the. I thought we'd already extended it because we had to get the batteries and keep our course open. I didn't think we had a choice.
So I don't think we want to hamper the golfers from the golf course, right? Mm-hmm. But we can pursue who is going to ultimately pay, not opposed to that. But
but if the lease is $78,000 more than what we're paying a year now,
no, it's the same.
It's the exact same. So it's really a wash as whether or not EasyGo or RMT pays all the expenses above and beyond what our basic lease is right now. So we wouldn't have any out of pocket money towards that to repair those.
So
if
we look at
the subrogation issue.
Yeah, so it's a subrogation issue, and it's also something that we'll want to take a look at as a precedent. So that it happens again next year.
But are the cards, I feel like the cards are still in good shape.
The cards are in excellent shape. Next week, half the shape of them.
And I don't have a problem seeing them here because, other than what would be nice to get all the cards again for another full period, but I think they're in fine shape.
So, was the lease already extended?
The lease has to be extended by the council. You guys have the authority to do that. We had to get the new batteries to keep Wade's operations going. So, question is, how do we negotiate with RMT, who covered the cost of the batteries? It didn't come out of our coffers, it came out of RMT's coffers. So if we don't extend the lease with RMT, then they ate $80,000, and then we're gonna have to negotiate with them for what these new batteries would be. By extending the lease, we're not adding any money
we are out the ability to renegotiate the lease for an additional term. So if we were to go and push this issue, because we didn't pay for the batteries, RMT did, the only loss that we sustain as a city is the potential renegotiation of the contract and a better rate. That's all we lose for the 1 year period.
But
no,
it could also be, I mean,
there's the possibility
this could be higher.
It could be
higher.
And there's the possibility of that in that additional year where we don't have new cars that you could have a lot of car failures. So that's an unforeseen.
Right. But that's part of the buffer thing.
Well, the other possibility is you could expand the buffer, but we want to get into the things. But we'll have to see how negotiable they are. Even if we had extended the lease informally, signed it, sealed it, whatever, we still have an argument that we can see what could be less. And so we don't have negotiations. So there are a variety of things that we could do. But it seems financially the city has been made whole, or at least kept whole.
So, Dave, is your recommendation to go ahead and approve the lease extension tonight, or to wait until you've had a chance to look at the warranty?
What I recommend that you do is that you approve the lease extension with such caveats as we might be able to negotiate. And if there are material improvement back to you, if we don't feel like we can and it's just as is, then it's business as usual.
Okay, I think you guys know what the facts are. Any questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Is there a comment motion?
Go ahead.
I make a motion that we to authorize extending the current lease agreement for 1 year with RMT, include RMT providing a 4,000 credit towards tire replacement, with the addition that our legal counsel will review the terms of the bumper agreement that was made with RMT, and that it could come back for review by the RMT.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I think this is Mrs. Reese's second. Any further discussion? All right, let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item 14, which deals with public notice for enterprise plan transfers.
Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Wade. I've been doing this for a couple of years now, but cities are required to recognize the water that other funds use, like the general fund or the golf fund. So we recognize that our park districts are open space, our parks, our golf course uses water, and these transfers in cover the offset the cost of that.
Any questions on this item? This is pretty straightforward. So, someone like to make a motion? I will take that
now. I move that we authorize the water and sewer enterprise fund transfers out to the governmental funds to cover related water and sewer charges for fiscal year 2017.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Crawley seconded. All those who speak. Let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to item number 15. Mr. Lowe, you can stay there. We'll talk about the certified rate from the county.
Okay. The beginning of June, we received notification from the county that the new growth, property tax growth, for our city was $10,589. We kept our property tax rate flat on our residents. This, because of the increase in property values, the overall rate at the certified tax rate is 0.002186, which includes .001512 for general operations, and .000674 for our debt levy. In the previous budget year, our certified tax rate was 0.002315. One of the things that's interesting that I put in the management, my management report, is when you look at other cities and the real property tax growth, ours was 10,000. The next lowest in this area is 47,000 by Alpine. The next lowest was 70,000 by Highland. We're significantly lower in growth. We're much closer to build out than any other city. So our residential growth going forward is pretty stagnant. So, and our property tax is one of our most stable revenues, versus most of our revenues that do well have more of a vulnerability to the economy's ups and downs. So I gave some examples if you were to change the rate. The mayor asked if we lowered the rate to 0.019, that is approximately $131,546 in property tax that we would lose going forward, plus the related motor vehicle tax that you get for your property tax levy amount, which would be 10% of that.
That was in the management report, right?
So, are there any questions?
Just one quick question for me. On here it says the county auditor certified tax rate for 2016 is 002186. Is that for our fiscal year 2016?
Yeah, the reason why it's called 2016, I have to explain this, is because when people pay the bill, and they're on a different fiscal year, they're paying it November 3rd, by November 30th, 2016. And the county's fiscal year ends December 2016. So to them, it's 2016. For us, it's 2016-17.
Okay, so they're on a calendar year while we're on fiscal year.
Yeah.
Okay. So we went down from 2315 to 2186 to keep our property tax about the same.
Yes.
That's just probably the value for how. Right. And Larry, you on the second items in the packet, and it shows our total balance of being $482,503 versus the $451,550. So we're actually going up by $30,944. Is that right?
You're looking at the summary chart, and I don't have that. So, valuation of our area, our tax district,
and not one of those is investing in those bigger companies. That's my idea.
Any other questions?
Do you have a question on this? Just to point out, see if I'm correct. So, the city portion stays the same. It's effectively the things in the house on the well, actually, lots of those, they're going 34. But is that taken into account households? Like, is it based on our estimated population growth or is it estimated on our parcels?
It's based on the parcels in our city.
Okay, that's what I was about.
So, essentially, that,
what residents don't understand is that they're going to see their tax rate or their overall taxes go up. Why is that? Because the biggest portion of their tax bill is Alpine School District. And their percentage never changes until the value of their house went up some 10-12% this year, and Alpine School District's percentage of that is just like that. But the city's does. It's a point that nobody's here cares, but for the record, people don't understand that. They think that they'll get to their tax statements in June or July or whenever they come out, and they're going to start saying, oh, look, my taxes went up.
And let me explain just within the district. Let's say Seabrook Hills Island and Alpine property values went up much higher than, because it's an area people want to live in more than the rest of Alpine school districts, Orem and the older areas. The older area you are in the city, most likely they assess it at a slower growth rate than the newer areas. So compared to other people in the district, yes, your taxes will go up because if you're in a newer area than Orem, other places. Now, in the city itself, you'll see the oldest parts of the city will actually get a tax rate. You want fixed incomes, maybe, and the people in newer parts will pay a couple dollars a month.
All right, because I know Jenny's done a little. Is it your part that's addressed that every year? I think you do a great job. I just wish more people would read it.
I think that things are starting to understand that a little better because we talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
And so
we need to just keep talking about that. That's all.
People need the July newsletter message.
So, Jenny and I first started here, the portion of one's property taxes that went directly to the city was about 24%. Now it's about 19%. So that's all good. But even though our budget grew, just with Alpine school districts and the other components of property taxes grew much more. That's not to say that you didn't grow, because you did. So let me just give some background in terms of why I asked staff to do what I did, which is I said, I want three different budgets presented to the council, one of which is combined certified tax rate. And that would be the ceiling. If you want to go higher than that, you're going to go. Taxation. So that would be the high one. And so, I looked around in other cities and we've always been at the high end of, in terms of property tax rates in Northern Utah County. So I wanted to get down in areas that is more competitive statewide. So 0.0019 is what I wanted to be. But I said, find a place in Virginia. And so, so Charlotte was kind enough to do that. So you saw a PowerPoint this afternoon that had three different options. And so the reason I want to start this discussion is this. So about 5 years ago, then the first budget that I voted on was included paying off the public safety building. And at that time, our total indebtedness was 16 million or so in numbers. Now it's around 14. So that's good. So a certain part of our expenses every year has been reduced by the fact that we're not paying principal and interest on those bonds that have been retired. So that's a good thing. Over the last 5 years, we've refinanced three bonds. And there are some refinancing costs that goes along with that. But we're also not paying as much principal interest on those three bonds.
And we passed the savings on to the savings.
Yeah, and we passed the savings on. And so that's part of the equation. And that money that we're not paying has been absorbed into our annual budget. And over that time period, we have a bench which is now generating between 80,000 and 90,000 above its expenses. That's a good thing. So that I waited for a while until that revenue about paid off the basement. I think we were about there in terms of the profit that we get from events paying off the basement. And also, we're getting a little bit more to take care of our roads from the gas tax that was passed by the state legislature. Getting a little bit more from sales tax. Through the business is not much. So all of these things are good things. And all of this savings, if you will, and increase in revenue in certain areas has been absorbed. And so there's never going to come at a point in time when we're going to be presented with an idea to take less revenue. So that is incumbent on us as the elected officials to do that.
That's not true.
That's my opinion.
That when the general obligation debt was refunded, I passed on the savings to the residents. I also moved motor vehicle allocation that wasn't being done before to the debt levy. That saved the residents. Again, if you look at what we're paying on the debt levy as a levy, what we're asking of the residents is much lower than when I started. I have done everything to keep costs down. And so to say that we're never going to try to keep costs down is incorrect.
Well, let me rephrase that so that it doesn't offend you, which is that I can't imagine a time where we're going to be presented with an idea that says we need to lower our property taxes. And so it's just the nature of government. I don't mean that as a negative, but it is. It's just that as government grows, then it's up to the elected officials, usually, to ask for that money to go back to the residents. There's a lot of good things that have happened in our city financially, and we should applaud those things. But this is their money. And so I feel like we're in a position where we should consider those things in terms of property tax reduction. And maybe you guys aren't here this year, but if not today, when? So those are my thoughts in terms of why I wanted three different budget ideas presented. They were able to do that. And now you guys can discuss what you want to do.
I think my thoughts on it have been, I do agree with Charles that when we have refinanced our bonds, especially, we have then lowered the tax rate that goes with those bonds so that way residents are paying less towards that debt. So when we did that refinance, we made sure that lowered the tax burden for residents. My big concern is that, like everything else, expenses go up every year. I mean, I think it's interesting to see how much health insurance goes up. And that's not just the city, that's the industry, that's in our whole country. So expenses go up, but really we're keeping our revenues pretty consistent. At some point, my fear is that if we aren't proactively putting money aside into our capital projects funds like we are now, that at some point we're going to get in a situation like Kyle first heard about the American Board and Plus Grove, where our streets are in disrepair, and we have not been setting aside funds to take care of that infrastructure need. And at some point, our infrastructure is going to have to be replaced. We're going to have to be upgraded. And if we don't have money set aside to do those things, then we're going to have to, once again, get into debt. If we even can, some of those cities can't even get a bond approved by their residents to take care of those needs. And I definitely don't want to see Cedar Hills get into that. I'm sure I'll find the email, but ULCT actually just emailed us this week saying that now we're finding out that the money that we thought we were going to get from road funds is considerably less than what we originally told. And so I just don't think right now we can rely on the state legislature to make sure that we're going to get the funding that we need to handle our road repairs, because even what we thought we were going to get, which is pretty modest now, has been cut in half.
And just to be clear on that very issue, Charlotte did a great thing and was very conservative in that revenue number, and the number he has in the budget, it will actually work for us. Now, these other cities that thought the state legislature was going to get more budgets could be in trouble. But Charles, again, very conservative, we're going to be on track with that number. So thanks, promise.
So I guess that's my only fear, is that we cut the tax rate to
considerably, and at some point in the future, we need that money for infrastructure. It's hard to now go back to residents and say, we want to dramatically increase your tax rate to cover that or to bond. And I really don't want to see us end up in the same situation that Pleasant Grove is in. That's, their roads are a disaster, and their public safety building is a hazard, and they can't get what they need in order to fix those issues. And like I said, our revenues are staying pretty flat, where our expenses continue to go up every year.
My wife's cousin, I was at their house a week ago, and they're in Pleasant Grove, and they didn't have anything good to say about their city. I mean, they're just sad. They just don't.
So I agree with most of what you said, but truth be told, we do put money into capital projects every year and in reserves. And so that's part of this, is that every year that I've been doing this and going back even further, we put, on the low side, tens of thousands of dollars into reserves for capital projects. On the high side, you put hundreds of thousands of dollars in there, and then we don't spend it. So that's, you know, a function of this is that, but I disagree with one thing that you said, is that I think that if we're responsible with the residents' taxpayer money, and there's a point in time when you need to do something, you go to them and they reward you for having been responsible with their money. And so that's how I think about it, is if we're responsible with their money, and when things are particularly good, and financially I think our city's probably never been as good a shape as we are today, and that's why we're having this discussion.
I think that's a good idea, but I also feel like I never like to kick the can down the road to a future council that would have to go back and possibly ask for money. I think, like you said, we're in a good financial situation, probably the best it's ever been in the 6 years we've been here. And that's all a good thing, and you've got to realize a good vision on that. And so, and I think the council supported most of those good ideas. The only thing I would like to say is that we did the math, and we did cut it down to 1.9 million. I think we're saving the average citizen in our city around $14. I just don't think that's, I don't think it's worth spending that much time talking about. I think we ought to, you know, I think the average citizen would buy a pizza if the city keep on the track of trying to get out of debt and spending our money prudently.
Yeah, maybe so, but
$14 for the year.
So small, then why not do it?
Because it makes a big difference.
I've always thought that, and I think you guys have too, this is the residents' money, and so even if it's a small amount, even if they're just going to use it to buy an old McDonald's, give it to them and let them decide what they're going to do. Robert.
Yeah, a few years ago I did an analysis about that our city was, and I think I've seen some similar analysis, and our city is comparable. If we compare our city, can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. If you compare our city with the other cities in the area, then we end up right in the middle of the road as far as our debt per resident.
Sure.
And one of the goals that I put out there this January was I'd like to see us reduce our debt. And with the economy as good as it is, I think that now is the time when you reduce your debt. And I would like us to see us put in the extra money we have into reducing our debts going forward, because there will be amendments for the less debt you have when the economy goes south. The better off, the better shape you're in as a city, the stronger you are as a city. And I'd rather that we aren't in the middle of the road, but we're one of the leaders as far as reducing our debt. And I know Alvin's done a great job of that. And I see us someday compete for them with them for the lowest debt per resident area. So instead of reducing taxes, and maybe we could say, hey, we reduce taxes next year, and so instead of doing that, I'd say we reduce the debt.
Thank you. Okay. I think I've said what I want to say. You guys all know where we're at. Just a minute, Dan. And so I think you guys know where I stand. I think staff does a really good job. I'm not personal about that. It's just that my preference is that government stay small, really small. So, Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, so I want to call your attention to page 16 of Charlotte's budget presentation. I think this is what he's going to cover next. Or maybe he already did that in the working session. But on page 16, it shows a graph of our property taxes for a typical resident. And back in 2007, they were $375 a year. In 2008, they're up to $400 a year. And if you go for a decade to now, 2016, they're under $300 a year. A lot of that is that we paid off debt or refinanced debt or and have some savings as a resident, but also reduced our property taxes over the years. I can't recall having a treatment taxation here where we raised them. They would generally put them down. And so if you look at the general trend in that plot, we've been increasing revenue for a decade. And yet over that same decade, our fire station staff fully, which greatly increased, over doubled our cost of fire. And our recreation programs have expanded greatly. So we're offering far more for residents, but asking quite a bit less for each of them in terms of the cost. But I think we've pulled off some real budget magic in our city. A lot of that is because sales tax revenues have gone dramatically as commercial. A lot of that is because of the careful budgeting practices that our staff uses, very good for budget every year. The capital project savings that we get every year, whether that's 10,000 or 100,000, those are absolutely vital for our city. It's the only way we've been able to set up parks, and our residents are still waiting over a decade more for parks to be built out. I look at our budget situation and say, we've really pulled out something amazing. We've reduced taxes for a long time for residents. We've got them to be quite manageable. And we've increased the amount of services. I really hesitate to lower any more for the same reasons that we talked about. I don't want to get us into a situation where we're not offering the services that our residents require and can affect us, especially our roads, but even our public safety. I don't want to reduce staffing on our fire station, which is what the Longview Public Safety talks about. I don't want to reduce our recreation programs. I don't want to cut our family festival. But I can't find $140,000 for things to cut. I worry actually we're going the wrong way in the sense that we're becoming so dependent on sales tax revenues that in the next several years, when the next recession hits, we're going to face some really, really tough choices. I think we need to hold steady with where we're at right now.
Thank you. Okay. If there's no more questions, then I'll take a motion.
That we approve resolution number 6-21-2016A, a resolution setting the total property tax levy as upon real and personal property for general governmental purposes for the 2016-17 tax year for the city of Cedar Hills. And with that, I move that we accept the county auditor certified tax rate that is provided in that.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'm sorry.
No, thank you.
Motion was seconded by
Daniel. Sorry.
By Daniel Malt. And any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Paul.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Charles.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous by the council. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 16. Mr. Paul, why don't you go ahead and present next year's budget?
Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going on locally and nationally. I got this quote from one of the Fed people yesterday, James Bowen. A switch to an alternative regime is viewed as not forecastable, so we'll simply forecast that the current regime will persist. Nationally,
all they see is that the slow,
I have no idea what that means.
Rapid growth is what is going to happen going forward. They can't see a time when that's going to change. And so, there's talk of more rate changes that were going to happen this year, and now they're kind of cutting back on that because the situation is just kind of emergency. So nationally, they really don't know what's going on. Locally, we know what's going on. Right, we see construction everywhere. On Market Watch, it called Utah County the second fastest growing area in the country, second only to the Nashville area. And our unemployment is low, which is really affected our ability to hire people, and it is putting pressure on our staff. The inflation for our area is higher than the rest of the country because of that. There's big pressures on hiring. Everywhere you go, any restaurant you go to, you will see signs, we are hiring. There's not any place to go that doesn't. And so Zions Bank says the only thing we have in common with the most of the country is that home prices have gone up 70%. And the rest of the country is around 6.8%. The attitude in Utah right now, if you're above 110, you're feeling economic prosperity. And as of March, Utah was 115.4. The rest of the country, it's not quite as happy. They're at 96.2. Now, a lot of this was brought up in the last discussion, but I'll go over some of the uncertainty that we have going forward as a city. I'm not sure how the commercial zones are going to develop.
I don't know about that.
And what's service tax or revenue? We have pending litigation costs, and we don't know what the ceiling is on that. We have a tight job market. We have higher turnover rate in a tight job market means that we're spending a lot more time training people and less time actually able to get things done. You have potentially higher costs for contracted services. We have unknowns on what our actual costs are going to be for these parks where we're adding recreation areas. We know our maintenance is going up on our parks. We've been told by our current contractor that based on what he maintains now, his price will be 25% next year. We'll go to bid, but we also know that we're trying to add additional park space. So we know that there's pressure right now on prices. We've experienced a few dying trees lately, and those are affecting our parks and trails and figuring out how to replace those. We're having water issues because people aren't metered and they just can run it as much as they want. And so sometimes, most of the time, amazingly, Cedar Hills has pretty good pressure, but sometimes we get neighborhoods that have issues. As long as we don't have meters, we need to be understanding of public works and that they can't supply more water or more power than that's actually there. It's a limitation that it's there. And until the residents demand that they have meters so that people control themselves, there's always going to be issues with PF. Our city's pretty new, but lately we're having more water lines break. We're becoming more like other cities, which means more street patches, more street repairs. We have very few septic tanks in the city, but what happens when they fail and it's our residents? How are we going to handle that? Are we just going to ignore them, or are we going to try to help them? We have sewer lines that are at capacity and will need to be replaced. We have our partners that we deal with for police and fire, and they struggle to balance their budgets, which is pretty, they want to put potentially more pressure on us to cover what they can't pay. Right now, we pay like $600,000 less than Alpine, has the same population for police. If we had to come up with $600,000, that would be really hard. Limited availability of lots means we're not having a lot of property tax growth, which I covered earlier. And then, and we have solar panels going in throughout the city that's bringing in a lot of revenue right now, but it's also going to hurt franchise fee revenues going forward. So those are uncertainty, and we always have uncertainty, and we have to move forward anyways. That's why we budget conservatively. Here's a census chart. It shows how much we've grown in the last 5 years, and the latest census on census.gov shows that our population went down. What does that mean going forward if 75% of your sales tax comes from population? Well, if our population decreases or stays flat, everyone else is growing, we're not going to see the growth that we have in the past. The only growth we'll see will be inflation, which isn't going to be enough. This is what our revenue allocation looked like in 2006. We had a lot of construction back then. Licenses and permits were 20% of our budget. Our sales tax was only 20% of our budget. Now, 30% we rely on sales tax, 3% on building licenses. Sales tax and property tax used to be pretty even, now they're not. And that's one of the things credit agencies look for. And if we did have to debt for any reason, that's going to affect us down the road. These are the pie charts. If you adopted a lower rate, this is, we'd have a higher reliance on sales tax and the property tax would be 17% or 18% if it was mid-range. So what's the long-term outlook of general revenues? New growth for property tax will be dependent on rate increases or limited new residential and non-residential growth. I've already talked about sales tax revenues. 75% of that comes from population. And we're just not growing. On our franchise tax revenues, 2/3 of it comes from Rocky Mountain Power. If we have 10% of our residents decide to get solar, then that's gonna, we'll lose any revenues we have for that. Right now I pay $9 a month for solar and I pay nothing to my city. So, monthly sales tax revenue, we, on the positive side, our monthly sales tax, we've had the best month in May, which represents sales in March. We've actually only had 75% of our year as far as sales tax. We put in July and August as placeholders to give us an idea of where we'll land. But at the end of the year, we don't get a finalized tax until the end of August. When we get those numbers, and then we take out July and August of the previous year. So those are pretty good months. If you look at July and August, we'll have to take those out. And then add in July and August this year, because July and August will be May and June collections. franchise tax revenues, it's kind of been mixed, but overall, we're still higher this year, mostly because last year we had such mild weather. General revenues year to year. Some of them are down slightly, motor vehicle, telecoms down, care tax, which is point of sale is up, and sales tax is up. Property tax is what we levy. Major program revenues are programs that staff have control over. They don't have any control over the general revenues, but our programs are doing awesome right now. And they've benefited from good staff and from a good economy. And right now we're 44,000 ahead in green fees of what we were last year. Pro Shop is at 14,000 where we were last year. Event Center Rentals was behind at one point, but now is up 6,000. And the rec programs have grown 26,000 this year. When a program grows, though, we can't capture all that revenue. We have to fund the staffing that it takes to run those programs, referees, event staff. When there's more events, it costs more. And Greg's done a great job at minimizing those costs, but there's still going to be additional costs. Building-related revenues. All the solar permits have really helped our building permits and our plan check fees, but still not getting the impact fees. So you can see for the year we're still down on park development fees compared to the last 2 years, even though our building permits and our plan check fees are significantly higher from solar. Solar is probably going to tail off this year when the incentive expires December 31st and people's permits. If they don't sign a contract by September, they probably won't get installed in time. So I think it's going to die down quite a bit after September. This is just a comparison of the certified property tax amount for all the cities. There's supposed to be a little bit, so you got blue, yellow, and then a purple, or a little purple on top, or some other color. And our amount of growth isn't even showing up, it's just slower compared to other cities. This is the slide that Daniel was talking about that talks about what a resident would pay the last 10 years. So they are paying less than 4 years ago when they started. Historical property tax rate pretty much mirrors the valuation of your homes, except for when we refinance our obligation debt and those type of things. So what are we as a city always try to follow? Best practices in finance. And so we're trying to always assess what we need and what we'd like and how to fund that without going bankrupt. I remember meeting a lady from Cedar Hills on a trip I was on, and the only thing she cared about was just don't let us go bankrupt. And because the news back then was like how the golf course is making us bankrupt. Well, things have changed a lot. Hopefully, people understand that. We have an equipment replacement plan. We have a capital improvement plan. We fund our building maintenance. Those are all critical so that we don't fall into situations where we're financially crippled. We can't keep good staff because there's no way to retain them. We have a long-term plan for water, sewer, and storm drain. And because we aren't getting those impact fees, we have to gradually raise the rates to save up for those. our debt service coverage is in compliance. And we utilize grants when it makes sense for our city. So based on that, let's go through some of different priorities that were listed. Communications was a big deal. It's a big deal for the council. We're also asked for a city issue tracking app, tracking council priorities, which is another communications thing. There was a discussion to continue talking about pools. So I heard there's going to be a committee on that. The golf course report is in the plan. I believe Daniel wanted to work on something that summarized the work that was done by the golf committee last fall. Use of business practices, update design guidelines, update open space zoning, email list attorneys. These are kind of the requirements that ask for, that need a lot of money to do that. Bay Hill Park, maintenance building, practice room fencing, the heritage park improvements, public works fencing, reduce city's debt. And there are some things I don't believe that we funded, and that's that were talked about, and that's improvements to the roundabout and sidewalks.
Cheryl, I don't want to hurry, but we still have a lot to go through.
Yeah.
Is there, can you make it through your PowerPoint in the next five minutes?
No.
Can you try?
No. I 5 minutes? I think there's like 40 more pages.
I know.
I
looked through it entire.
So, it's kind of like, really important that I emphasize, I feel like my point is to educate and remind people what good finance is are, and so I think it's important to take that time. And if you don't think my slides are up, then you don't have to do them.
Just
what do you think?
Let's move quickly.
These are the biggest changes to revenue. Are there any questions on these revenue changes? These are the changes from revenue from the tentative budget. Are there any questions on revenue budget updates? These are fund balance trends. Our general fund has a very close tie to the economy. You can see it going down. The economy went down and now it's rebounding. Capital projects had over $2 million at one point, and then it used that money to pay off the deficit in the golf fund. So what you see on this slide is cash at negative $2.1 million at one time in golf, and now it's positive, which never happened before. These are the changes in the last and expenditures. So these are the changes for employees. Are there any questions about how the wages and benefits were updated? Okay, legal services, public safety, and street maintenance trends. This street maintenance plan, and you've noticed that it's underway and it's causing havoc in our city. Park maintenance trends.
Can you just touch on park maintenance trends just real quick with what we anticipate coming forward? Just real quick, Council Board.
I think, well, I kind of mentioned it earlier, is our contract's coming up and it's going to cost a lot more, plus doing new parks will cost, add to that.
So are we
going to
send them
out
to bid then?
Yeah. Yes. But they still might have a new cost. These are all the changes, expenditure updates that were $10,000 or more. Is there any questions on any of the expenditure changes? Here's some of the changes we made to materials and supplies, other decreases from contracts, office equipment. These are the departments that were affected by market increases. This is their departments that were affected by redlining. Increased amounts for contracts, fire, dispatch, and park maintenance. Other miscellaneous changes. These are the care tax projects in the past and in the future. These would have been the cuts if certified tax rate was not adopted. Here's the highlights from golf and golf debt. Any questions about the golf fund? No questions? The golf has done well enough that it's built up a fund balance to pay for the fairway mowers instead of using the water pool fund, as it had to do when its fund balance was lower.
So we won't go through the water pool for those purchases this year?
For this year at least, so, yeah. Okay. And as long as they're doing this well, they'll fund it themselves.
We only used the motor pool fund 1 year. That was last year.
Yes.
Fiscal year 2016. Yes.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good thing. We have access to what's about.
I like that too, that it keeps the expenses in the fund. It's harder for me to really try to track that cost. It's really hard for me to keep track of it.
Excise tax debt service fund is a new fund, and that's just taking the public works building and moving it out of the capital projects fund. That's capital project highlights. Any questions about capital projects? Any questions about water, sewer, phone calls?
I just have a quick question. There's a bond financing proceeds amount in the fiscal year 2017 budget. What is that?
In the capital projects?
Yes.
So that's the offset for the Deerfield based on what we haven't saved for.
So that could go, and
that's based on us purchasing it for a lower price, which
would probably be more expensive. So it would probably be better if we could purchase the project that costs bonds for that.
Yeah. Depending on what happens with the commercial rent, I guess.
Sorry.
What the price is.
Sorry, I'm sorry. No, it's not your presentation. I just didn't say all money, so I'm going to
I can, if there's no other questions, I can.
No, I don't want to rush you. I just have not been feeling well all night, so.
Now, well, is there any, really, this is kind of where I was going. Unless someone wanted to get into the water.
You may understand what's going on. Did you raise your hand?
Is council members of Paul on the line still?
Huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so. In summary,
we went anyway, right?
Our city's not growing anymore. Our local economy is doing great. Our national and world economy is not doing as good. We may eventually catch up with us. We have a tight job market, which is making it hard to retain employees. And we have higher costs in areas going forward, like legal services, maintenance, capital improvements. I'm recommending no increase or decrease property taxes and following the lower income study. And that's my presentation.
The lower income study, we have to adopt that every year as part of the budget.
Did we approve that?
You have to adopt the fee schedule later.
I have one quick question, too. Aaron, as far as the theater rules on the budget, that's the first I've heard of that. Has that been mentioned in a meeting with us before?
A couple times, but what that is access, adding access to that theater and some electrical issues we have from the stage to the goes through the water. Some electrical stuff. Jeff understands what you mean, but it's to kind of fix the issues for the.
Are you talking permanent seating here or just a grass area? Because I don't recall accessing it.
It details a couple of items in which the erosion of the stream bed is creating a fall hazard for those that are on the stage. And they also run electrical for all presentations in our movie night, et cetera, and they run electrical cords through the water from one side to the other. We're also looking at some options for ADA access, which is not being provided in the seating area at this time.
Sure. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay, this is an action item, folks, so Charlie made his presentation. If you'd like to ask questions, do it now. If not, I'll take a motion on this item number 16.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution number... What's the resolution number?
621-2016-B.
Yeah, 621-2016-B. Resolution adopting the 2016-17 fiscal year budget for the city of Cedar as your term.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Gettis seconded. Any further discussion? Set the vote. Mr. Sapala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Gettis.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 17, action item on FY16 budget amendments.
We have a few budget amendments. One for general revenue adjustments for sales tax and telephone tax. And we have some solar-related revenues and expenses, family festival adjustments, recreation event adjustments, in addition to expense for sprinkler improvements, and a transfer to capital projects. Now, there's one little item that I usually have on hand, and it was brought up to me by Nicole Allen after I submitted this. We usually commit the donations for the year, which is about $500 to revenues. We increase that, and by $500, the city council expenditures by $500. Also, we commit the youth city council. We've committed in the past the youth city council revenues for future budgets, future expenditures. We ask if we would commit 1035-106 community arts revenue to be used for future community arts related expenditures. Like this. Best. Are there any questions about that? Because that's kind of new.
So, are you saying that
I understand the city council because you've done that. They do a fundraiser, and so they're actually bringing in the funding for that. So we've committed that to go forward in the future this year. Are you saying that the unexpended account balance?
Not the unexpended revenues.
Okay, so revenues from the.
So right now there's $300 in that.
$300. So, and now are you talking to the city council?
The city council has $500.
Okay.
You don't have to say that amount. You can just say commit the revenue for it to be committed for future community activities. And when the originally happened with YCC, one of the, it was a really tight budget. We cut their budget from $3,000 to $2,500, but we gave them the caveat that the donation that you raised, save for future years to use. That kind of offset the cut a little bit. And so it's up to you guys. Some of the things that they can do with it is, like, right now, if they have to pay for a theater show, the rights are like $1,700, so it would help them pay for, if it's not Shakespeare, Shakespeare's free. If they want some Disney thing, then it helps them pay for another show or something.
I can explain a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Then we'll know a little bit about this too. Be a reason not to speak on this. But it's like YCC. I know what you're asking. So the Arts Committee, with the Salsa Night stuff, we didn't provide some revenue for that. So those funds have been set aside on an account that Cheryl's created. And I'm assuming what she's talking about is with this Creekside Fest right now, they will have revenues. So we pay a certain dollar amount from our other parks, other events, things called. We pay some expenses, but on top of the expenses, there's actually revenue that we split with Highland because it's a joint venture. We get half of those revenues too within that same amount. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so there's not a corresponding revenue account.
Right. He's
created. Because normally we don't anticipate that they generate revenue,
right.
So we fund it as an expense, the entire program. But when they do bring in revenues, what you're suggesting is that those revenues are committed, set aside, committed for the next year.
Are you in charge?
Okay. I just want to make sure the council understands that as well.
Councilmember Bailey, you're going to speak. Yes. Yes.
Thanks. And the golf budget items are trades, and then the capital projects is the transfer. Are there any questions about these budget items?
Here's one that is in that you're quite understanding, and it's the $25,000 increase for sprinklers. Just have we done that yet, or is that something
that's just for cars, right? So.
But that's what we're coming down yet, or are we planning?
No.
We're planning on it.
They're getting the parts, but they won't be able to install them for tonight.
We'll get it in this one. So we're going to talk about that. It'll still be during the busy water season that they're installed, or is it going to be at the fall?
Currently, the parts need to arrive and then install it. The mechanism needs are updated water control systems and manage our water uses. It won't be. They will begin installing and probably it's going to take at least until the beginning of the season to get all of it installed.
I smile because every year we get people complaining that cities asking us to conserve water, yet they're watering during rainstorms, and it's impossible for us to serve them. Is that going to help with that issue?
It should eliminate that issue. The whole thing is operated more like a health or sprinkler system where we'll have off-site control.
Great question.
Charles, did you say you are finished?
Yes.
Okay. There's no questions. Then I'll take a motion on item number 17, which is budget amendments.
Resolution
Speak up loud, please.
I motion that we adopt resolution number 621-2016C, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, adopting the amended 2016 fiscal year budget for the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Bailey, seconds. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Spaulding?
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. On to item number 18, also an action item, which is adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to our schedule.
Mayor and Council, in your package you have a memorandum and also an amended city fee schedule. The city fee schedule contains changes to the city's charges and fees, and in specifically, it adopts the fees and charges that related to the Bowman Collins utility rate study. So if you look at in your packet, you can see how the different fees change according to that study. There is also a change to the fee schedule, the non-residential trip-in fee, which is an impact fee for commercial or non-residential use, has also been added to the fee schedule because there was a question on that in the past from a commercial user. So that has been added.
And what is that impacting on?
So if you're a non-residential business or entity, and you, so in our commercial zone, let's say that a business comes into the commercial zone and they generate trips for their business, this is how we calculate the fee for those trips. So an average residential home generates about
I'm seeing the.
This is on page 3 on your fee schedule. Are you on page 3? It's under transportation. It's.
Letters.
It will be once it's finalized.
It is adopted.
Okay.
So after this, there will be a next one. Just want to make sure. Or it is, yeah, residents aware.
Okay. So, Council, do you have any questions for Mr. Butler on this item? I'll take a motion. Go ahead.
I make a motion that we approve resolution number 6-21-2016 D. Resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees, bond, and buying schedule of the city of Cedar Village.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second? Bailey, second. Any further discussion? Is that a vote? Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Move on to item number 19. Mr. Mott, you're going to give us a resolution adopting the stormwater management.
Yes, sir. Council, as the city's stormwater discharge permit expired, and we're required to renew that, the EPA and the state of Utah has had additional mandates that need to be included within our management plan prior to July 1st in order for that plan. And some of the items that should be noted, the new requirements are going to necessitate additional staff time in order to manage.
City will be required to do more testing, do more dry and wet weather screening. It is getting to the point now where the city will have to look at discharge at the alcohol locations of our city and take samples for different levels of nutrients or contaminants.
What, during a storm you'll be required to go take readings now?
Yes. So when Jeff mentions that we will have increased labor costs and hard costs too, because of testing, those tests will have to be submitted to an actual company that can test it. We cannot test that inside the city. We don't have the facility to do that. We will have
substantial increase in stormwater.
What government agency is requiring this? Is it EPA?
Right. So the EPA, through the state of Utah, the state of Utah has the jurisdictional responsibility to enforce the EPA standards.
And the main purpose of these things is to make sure that no pollutants get transferred from our jurisdiction, our city, to the next city that the water flows into. Is that right? Okay, so anything they can go on to by city.
Right. Anything going into the waters of the state, pretty much all the waters. And our past program, we was focused on sediment as our main contaminant. Now we've had to add nitrates and sulfates. Those are the items that we need to test for.
I guess what I understand is it's very natural for sediment to get transferred, whether there's people or not. It seems like usually EPA is looking for fluids that are man-made or whatnot. It sounds like sediments that are natural are also a problem. Is that right?
It is. A lot of sediments from road, washings from the road, brake linings, salts, and sediments from streets.
But just an example, what is that? What are some of the ideas of the
One of them that the EPA is wanting to get away from is direct discharge that flows into streams and lakes and large retention basins that are deep, which is what Cedar Dills uses. So they want multiple small, they want all the precipitation to get collected and put back into the ground on the site where it falls. So it's porous asphalt, small parking lot, dark, where the water will drain in and percolate into the ground rather than going into a squirt water box. These types of things, where there'll be a long perforated pipe to collect the water along the streets and discharge it into the ground. They're going to be high maintenance, tight pipes that are not going to last for a long time. So that's the type of stuff that they're looking at.
What Jeff's alluding to is that the labor cost keeps going to substantially increase, not only this year, but in the future.
One of the first impacts we'll have on labor is that the education rules have changed significantly, which now, certainly we put notices in our magazines and monthly on our website that we'll have an annual contract to train them meeting. They have a fourth grade elementary classes trained every year. We have information public that are city accessible. These types of things can continue, but we need to expand them. We need to have specific training for businesses, residential, industry, which we don't have. And each of these groups, civic groups, government groups, we need to do drill training and then monitor what the results of that training is on our stormwater impact.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff on the side? Okay, I'll take a motion on this.
I motion to approve Resolution 621-2016-E, the adoption of City Cedar Hills Stormwater Management Program, including modifications based on the annual review by the program administrator.
Thank you. My motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Cipolla seconds. Any further discussion? Seven vote. Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Yes.
Did you say nay?
Nay.
You have one nay. Mr. Crowley. What did you say?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Item number 20 was supposed to be removed. Because I'd like to bring it back. We can discuss this more. So if someone would like to make a motion now to...
I thought you were going to talk about the question.
I wanted this brought to another meeting. And so...
we get a motion to table that amendment.
Yes, like a motion to table it, bring it back to the next meeting where you talk about it.
Well, I'll make a motion to table that in the next meeting.
I communicated with Mr. Cipolla earlier about this on the agenda, he was okay to be tabled as well. So I have a motion to table it. Is there a second? Second. Motion was seconded by Mr. Geddes. Any discussion? Let's have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. The ayes have it. That was unanimous. Thank you.
Mayor and Council, we have had this on our agenda in the previous council meeting to discuss adoption. 0.1% tax on cultural activities and organizations. It's called care tax. Other agencies may call it something different, like a ZAP tax. Cedar Hill currently has a care tax, and it is set to expire. It was set for an 8-year period, which will expire this fall. And so the city's intent was to ask the county if they were going to have a general sales and use tax to provide this to the county. They responded and said no, they will not put that on their ballot. And with that, then that opens the door for the city of Cedar Hills to include this in the general ballot this fall. And so in order to prepare that for the general ballot on the county election, we need a resolution from the council saying that you desire to place this on that ballot. And what this would do is extend our care tax at the same rate for the next 10 years. And those funds would be used to fund, we talked about that in the budget presentation, but a lot of our parks, facilities and recreation facilities would be augmented financially by use of the care tax. This last year, I think it generated close to $40,000 in that neighborhood, and so it would be approximately the same amount going forward because it's the same rate, but it depends on obviously sales. So it can go up or it can go down.
I just have a question on this, and that is what, so we, it just goes into our general revenue fund, and so it really is just an increase in, you know, it's just a tax, it does, there's no restrictions on how it's spent.
No, there are restrictions. It's specifically set aside for our recreation and cultural arts uses, and so it's a restricted fund. We can't just put that into the general fund is a restricted amount. It is restricted.
Yes. But we are spending more than that in the recreation program anyway. So
it's just offensive. It doesn't fund it.
Because it's effectively it's used to offset some expenses in the recreation fund anyway. So really it's just a tax. That's what I'm noticing about it is that, you know, that we wouldn't increase our recreation or we wouldn't increase our parks without this. I don't think you might have to a little bit.
You may.
But it kind of goes into a big pool that's used for everything. You have to look closely at what we're going to cut. It wasn't necessarily the recreation.
And so fund the basement.
If you review Charles' budget presentation, he identified where it was this funding that's been used.
Uh-huh.
And so that would be a decision that the city council would have to make if this care tax were not continued. And that funding structure increase, that the city council would have to decide how we fund those facilities in another manner if you do. And there may be some things that may cut.
But it wouldn't necessarily have to be recreation programs.
One of the advantages, and I don't know the percentage, I think the big push when it first happened was because they knew the Walmart was coming and they knew that it wouldn't just be Cedar Hills residents that would be using it. And so it was pretty much taking advantage of the neighboring residents' subset because it's all a point of sale. So that was kind of the big push. I just kind of want to give the background on why. They said 2 out of 3 people would probably be outside of our city that are funding this. And so that was, they considered it free money for compared to other options.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Bunker? not, I'll take a motion on this item.
I would move that we approve resolution 6-21-2016. What are we on? C or D?
F.
F.
A resolution placing an opinion question on the November 8, 2015 Utah County general election ballot, whether or not the city of Cedar Hill should impose a public health and use tax of 0.1% on botanical, cultural, and recreational organization facilities in Cedar Hill, and approving the ballot title and proposition.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Gannon seconds it. Any further discussion? Time to vote. Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much. So last item, ladies and gentlemen, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Aye.
Motion is second. Mr. Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much.
It was Cheryl's comment that the talking over the edge. I'm sure of it.